Today on the Grave Talks, Close to the Dead, a conversation with Jeff Woldridge. When it comes to investigating the paranormal, Jeff Woldridge is one of the most seasoned investigators around. From years of uninterrupted access to a Civil War battlefield to the sometimes terrifying happenings at the infamous Anderson Hotel, Jeff has had an intimate connection with the undead. Today we hear his story and his experiences coming close to the dead.
Well, I guess it was when I was younger, elementary school, I was able to check out some of these ghosts and cryptid books and just strange books from the library at the school for whatever reason they had them. And, other shows like Unsolved Mysteries and Sightings, it just kind of piqued your interest in that there was something kind of mysterious out there. I didn't have any experiences until I was like 15, but, it kind of got me going. And, I read as much as I could and I would watch as much as I could. And it's just really interesting.
Yeah, I hear you. I had a similar start as well. Didn't really have many experiences, but Unsolved Mysteries was on every week and all of that. I loved it. So you said at 15 you had your first experience. Tell me about that.
Well, it was a real accidental experience. Actually, my cousin at the time was helping build a haunted house for a local community group in an old hotel. Mm-hmm. Not the Anderson in town, but another one.
Okay.
And so we were in there. I was with him. It was kind of cool because it was an old hotel and we was looking around.
Yeah.
So, we had gotten to the end of the day. It was almost dark outside. And we had forgot to lock one of the rooms upstairs that had a lot of the equipment and things. So we went back in, locked that up. And it was about three of us. We were coming out and we stopped because we started to hear footsteps coming up one of the staircases. And we knew for a fact that that staircase was boarded up. So, there's no way that somebody was there. Mm-hmm. We went over, looked, nothing was there. But it was like somebody had on like hard-soled dress shoes that was walking up those stairs. And from that moment on, that little bit of activity, I was hooked. I had to get more. I had to find more. I had to discover more. I wanted to know what that was.
Yeah. A haunting in a haunted house. That's an interesting combination.
Yeah. And definitely we can get down that road eventually, but that's probably a really bad idea, but there's several that do it.
Yeah, I've heard many stories like that over the years of people who are like, well, we were just the actors and there shouldn't have been this going on, but it was. It's always perfect setting for that sort of a thing. So tell me more. You obviously had the experience as a child. You had an interest in this. How did it continue on as you grew?
Well, when I was able to drive a car and kind of explore on my own, I would go just kind of sit outside of, old buildings and things and look. You couldn't really go into some places, but, I was trying to do my best to feed that one, I guess.
Yeah.
So probably, I was probably about 19, maybe something like that. Patty Starr, which is a local ghost researcher, she's been doing this for a long time. She offered classes in Lexington, Kentucky. So I went and took one of her classes and she basically taught you the ropes. This is what the terms are. This is how you do things. Here's, this and that and the other thing. And she kind of took it upon herself to do that. And then after her classes, she kind of took me under her wing and I was able to go investigate these places, in different parts of the state. So really helped me cut my teeth as far as investigations go. And then after that, I would kind of go off on my own and do my thing. But, it was nice to have kind of a mentor to share how to the proper ways to do certain things.
What were some of your first experiences out there as an investigator all those years after your first experience?
Well, the biggest things that I would notice would be, like voices, not necessarily EVP, but just voices that you would hear, like sounds you would hear. Code spots were always really hard to explain because I remember one time we were in a cemetery in the summer and we had a really really cold spot, and that was really strange. But it was more or less just little things to kind of, you know, keep me guessing and wondering and researching and getting into things. And then shortly thereafter, I was able to kind of become one of the researchers that for Perryville Battlefield, which was a really brutal battle in Kentucky. And I asked the state's permission. They gave me permission, and I investigated that battlefield for several years, 3 or 4 years. So it was kind of my first place that I had unprecedented access to a location. Mm-hmm. So you could really kind of see how things work. And I always tell people, if you ever have the privilege to have access to a location, just unlimited, mm-hmm. you'll really understand the paranormal better. And you know, some people go to one location for one night and they're like, well, nothing happened. Well, you were there for maybe 8 to 12 hours. So that's kind of hard. But when you're in a location for, I mean, as long as you want, for as many days as you'd like, yeah. I mean, you could really kind of start to understand certain patterns and things.
What were some of the things you learned when you were investigating that battlefield for all that time?
I learned, I really got to see the difference between a residual and an intelligent haunting. Residual haunting is almost like the location recording something and then playing it back when the conditions are right. And then an intelligent haunting can communicate with you. So, you know, I heard like a horse galloping full speed and there was no horse there. We heard, you know, we would smell that. And the story goes that one of the generals had a horse shot out from underneath of him on that hill where we got all that. We heard men carrying on full conversations, but the conversations are strange because you can never understand what they're saying. Mm-hmm. I've heard these many times in locations and you can never understand what they're saying, but they're talking as loud as we are. So it's just unusual. I mean, you know, EVPs, all kinds of different things.
When you have that where you can't understand what they're saying, is the only thing I can think of is like the video game The Sims. Have you ever seen that where they talk to each other?
It's very similar.
Like that?
It really is.
Yeah, where it's not really a language, but it's a language.
Kind of like that Animal Crossing babble, you know? Where it's and you're like, well, I don't even have any understanding of what they're saying. And maybe that's something that's lost in maybe some type of time slips or dimensional bleeds or who knows. I mean, it could go anywhere. This stuff, it really takes a weird turn sometimes.
When it comes to battlefields, and specifically that one, and maybe you can speak more broadly as well, what do you find there? Do you find more things that are residual repeating themselves? Because obviously a lot of trauma took place on those grounds. Or do you find more intelligent, or is it kind of a mix? What's been your experience?
It's kind of a mix, but there's a lot of residual. Like I heard cannon fire regularly, mm-hmm. like regularly enough where when you would get there and, you know, you would hear it. And if somebody had never been there before, they'd be like, oh, did you hear that? I'd be like, yeah, I hear that all the time. I mean, it was just normal because you got to think when the battle was going on, the trauma and the people can't really, I don't think people really grasp that of the Civil War. I think that's one thing with the Civil War. People don't really grasp the trauma and the just overall chaos of a battle like that. I mean, it was this one in particular in Perryville was one of the most brutal battles of the Civil War because of the short amount of time and the amount of people that were injured or killed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was like a matter of hours, but it was thousands of people that were injured or killed. And some of them were left dying on the battlefield, and the farmer and his pregnant daughter were left to dispose of their bodies. And it was the Confederate soldiers. So there's several mass graves. And that's because they didn't want to have to deal with them. And the pigs and the livestock were starting to eat the bodies. So they wanted to get rid of the bodies. So they would bury the dead and dying in these mass pits on the property. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the chaos and people being killed abruptly, I think, is what causes some of those hauntings. Because you got to think about it. If I'm killed that fast, say a cannonball or something takes me out, I have no idea I'm dead.
You have no
time to even understand that. Now, somebody that's shot and they're bleeding out and they're slowly dying, they may get it. But somebody that's killed that fast with an explosion or something like that, they're out there. You know, it's just they're thrust out of their body so fast. It's insane.
Are they ever able to, and we're talking about intelligent here specifically, like just, yeah, being thrust out of your body, cannonball, you don't know you're dead, and suddenly you're dead. Is there ever a way, in your opinion, to help them realize that they are dead? Does it always require the intervening of, you know, someone on the living side going, hey, by the way, you're dead? Really? I haven't figured that out for the last 100 years. You
know? This may be a controversial answer.
No, I'd love to hear it.
You know, I've never seen an instance where a haunting stops because of that.
No.
And even the famous ones, you know, and they may not admit it, but a lot of the famous cases that made movies and television, they always come back. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that we'll never fully understand. I don't care what psychic mediums say. Mm-hmm. I know very good ones.
Yeah.
I don't know that the crossover thing can happen with everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that some ghosts fully understand where they are or what's going on, or you can make them understand.
Yeah.
I've seen that in many experiences and with my work with the Anderson Hotel and other places that I've had just unlimited access to. Mm-hmm. They don't seem like they really care in some instances. They're just there and they're wandering around and they're doing what they're got to do. Now, I've been in some places where some ghosts are very chaotic. And I've had some psychic mediums tell me that ghosts and spirits act differently. So, I mean, you know, I don't think we'll fully understand that stuff until we are there.
Sure. I'm just waiting for one to finally say, there is no light. Stop telling me to go to the light.
I have no clue what you're talking about. Where is this light?
Yes. Yeah, like,
you know, go to the light, can.
I know. It almost seems like a very narcissistic way of thinking about right. The dead, where it's like, let me tell you how to
come over here. You know, they're probably sitting there like, please stop yelling at me. I don't understand what to do here.
It's very much like someone who in life where someone's like, I'm a neurosurgeon. Like, oh, really? I played Operation once as a child. I bet I could join in with you.
Exactly.
It's like you don't have any experience. No, it's always an interesting thing. When we're talking about residuals, I want to talk about that for a moment, because that's always an interesting one to me. Do you find that residuals are ever triggered by something to start? Do they start like clockwork at a certain time of the day?
I will tell you this.
Yeah.
I've found that sometimes humidity has a play in some of that residual stuff. Really? That's because I've had access to several places.
Yeah.
And they literally give me a key, which why anybody would ever do that, I don't know. But, you know, they're like, here, and they have access.
Sure.
So I've found sometimes when it's static charges from, like, electrical storms, mm-hmm. or humidity sometimes will cause it to happen. So I've gotten some really insane recordings from just putting a recorder in this building and leaving it for 24, 48 hours. And then when the conditions are right, boom, there it is. It's like a perfect voice. It's just talking. And you're like, that's insane. So, you know, I mean, I found it. Now I have found that certain weather conditions do have a play in this stuff.
Sure. Is it always, when there's a residual, is it connected to a physical object or building? Take, for example, let's say there's a residual haunting at this old shack, and it keeps happening. But guess what? They're going to tear down the old shack, and it's just going to be a field. Does that residual continue there in just the ether of where it was, because that's the geographic point as to where it keeps going? Or is there something to do with the boards in that shack that once stood there that were there at the time of whatever is being repeated?
You know, I'll tell you the strange part about this. At the Anderson Hotel, which we can get into that whenever, mm-hmm. there's a sighting in back when it was open for apartments of a person that was burnt from the waist up. And there's never been a fire there in that building. But there have been other buildings that have burnt down at that location. So it's weird that possibly that ghost is from an entire other building, but it was on that land. So I don't know. And there's some theories out there that say they flock to the nearest structure, you know, maybe if something's torn down, which maybe would give the reason why that some houses are haunted close to cemeteries. I don't know. But it's very strange, and that's one of the harder things for me to understand, because I've investigated plenty of buildings where they've burnt down and other buildings have been rebuilt. And, you know, it's almost like you're getting a ghost from one of those other locations because it don't make sense with the current place. So I don't know. I mean, it's almost like maybe they're locked to that location for whatever reason, not necessarily that structure.
Sure. I've another thing that is interesting. I've heard many stories where, let's say there was a balcony somewhere once, or maybe the inside of the building, the floor was 3 feet higher at one time and now it's not. And, and the idea that they're walking and using essentially the layout of what the building was at that time to this day, almost as if they're not operating in our geographic layout.
Well, I've seen that. I've heard that. There have been many times when they've seen a ghost walk through a wall, and then they've done some research and there was a door there.
Yeah.
There have been other situations where they've seen them walk what looked like upstairs, but there's no stairs. Well, there was stairs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's all these different theories out there, and some people say that ghosts see the location the way that it was when they were alive. Well, there's other situations where they can definitely see into our time period. So,
yeah.
Like I said before, I don't know that we'll fully understand until we're there, and it's difficult sometimes. Sure.
Oh, it's all conjecture. What I find so interesting about doing this show for so many years is just everyone's perspective and everyone's, you end up with far more questions than answers.
I think people overthink the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think it's horribly overthought. And I always tell people, I'm like, you know, keep it simple.
Yeah.
You know, I believe it was in school, they would always say, like, it was the KISS method, keep it simple, stupid.
Sure.
And I think it was like a writing exercise or something. But it makes a lot of sense, because keep it simple. You're overthinking the entire thing.
Yeah.
If you keep it simple and think logically about it, you're probably going to have better results. And I've had that.
Sure. Sure. And treating the dead as you would the living. The way you get responses, if you start screaming at somebody, they're not going to want to talk to you. You know, if you're just,
and don't go into a location looking like a space person.
Sure.
You know, there's some people that bombard places with equipment.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I didn't get anything. Well, would you talk to somebody that just walked into your house that has all these gadgets and gizmos that they've never seen before? Probably not. So, you know, I try to gradually introduce things like that.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Anderson Hotel. How did you, take me way back, how did you initially get yourself connected with this place? What was your first experiences with it?
Well, I do a ghost walk in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, where I live. And I've done that for 8 years. And I've started researching those locations 10 years ago. So there was always the hotel, and it was always up above these other buildings. So I would take letters and slide them under the door because I wanted to try to reach the owner and be like, hey, can I come in and look around? But no responses ever. Betsy and Jackson own Heavens to Betsy, which is a restaurant and deli downstairs. Now they bought the building. So Betsy told me, she said, you need to come see the hotel. Well, absolutely. I've been wanting to get into that place for years. And so I went up there, toured the building, and it is absolutely huge. It's 26 original rooms, a lobby, other things. So it's very large. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed when I got up there was it was almost like a time capsule, and there were so many personal belongings that were left behind. So I was like, huh, this is interesting.
How long had it been?
It had been shut down at that point. It shut down in the late 80s. So
okay.
I got in there about 2015, 2014. So, I mean, people had not lived there for decades.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, you know, when I first got in there, I always tell people it's kind of like when you have a car battery in a really cold winter and you're trying to start it and it's got energy, but it's not a lot. Mm-hmm. When we started to investigate the place, it was energetic, but it was like they hadn't been fed for so long because it had no electric, no water, no nothing. I mean, it was simply shut down up there. So I had to start to gradually introduce energy to the location because I wanted to see what was possible. And I used these little plasma balls that everybody has seen that you put your hand on and, you know, makes little lightning bolts. Well, those are plasma balls, and those were actually invented by Nikola Tesla. And a lot of people don't know that, but they're actually enclosed Tesla coils. So it basically, that little globe protects you from getting killed from this Tesla coil. Mm-hmm. And Tesla coils in general are very dangerous if they're just out in the open. Mm-hmm. So I've used those, and they're battery operated, so I didn't have to plug them in. And I noticed that the activity would start to get more and more and more. Then we found the bloody mattress up there that a lady had died on in the 80s. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. Was I told Betsy, I said, ask the previous owner if anything had happened up there, because the historical research was very difficult because there just wasn't a lot out there.
Yeah.
So as I was digging through the historical research, she asked the previous owner. And in the old newspapers, I found that it was constructed about 1933. It was opened about 1935. And it was open all the way into the late 80s. So people lived there in some way. Now, in the 50s, you know, you could stay there for $2 a day, which is like $30 room today. Mm-hmm. And I always have the question to ask, especially in this area, is why would they build a hotel in a town that was built on bourbon and during Prohibition? And I think they were trying to get a jump on the hotel business for the distilleries when they came back. And they never fully came back the way that they were supposed to. Now we have Wild Turkey and Four Roses, mm-hmm. You know, which is very popular brands, but not nearly as much distilling as we had before. Mm-hmm. So they had to hang on to this building and do something with it. And people were like, well, why don't they change it? Well, there's 26 original rooms. There's 26 original rooms today because the walls are load-bearing walls. So if you knock the wall down, the ceiling's coming in on top of it. So they can't change it. So about the 70s, business had kind of slumped again. So they started renting it out as long-term to short-term apartments. $5 a day, $7 a day if you had a fridge in your room. And that brought in, you know, former inmates getting out of prison, needed a place to stay. Mental patients, their families would get them one. You know, elderly people, people on fixed incomes, people with just shady backgrounds in general.
Yeah.
And Betsy had talked to the previous owner, and he had told her that two men had hung themselves up there, one in a closet. And then a lady in the late 80s had slit a wrist and died on a mattress up there. But he was adamant that they had thrown the mattress away, almost to the point where she was like, I'm not sure that they threw the mattress away. And I knew for a fact that there was one mattress up there that was still laid out. And it had this big stain in the middle and a little stain on the side. And I used luminol, which is the chemical that detectives use for blood stains, sprayed the mattress, and the big stain glowed and the small stain glowed. So it was 100% blood.
Yeah.
90% chance this is the mattress that the lady died on. Now, the former owner just stuffed a lot of junk down the back stairwell to keep people basically from breaking in. We pulled another mattress out of there that was blood covered. It was probably around from the 40s or 50s, though, based on the tags on the mattress. And it had more blood spatter on it, so it was just older. And then there was a clawfoot tub up there, one of the original tubs that had blood all over it. So still not sure where those came from, but I was able to talk to former managers and residents, and they told me a lot. And I've kind of got it down to about 14 deaths from natural causes and suicides. Probably that's late 60s to late 80s. That's all the research I have there. The 30s to the 60s, no idea, because the newspapers didn't cover it and those people have passed away. So sure, there's probably a whole lot more going on up there than I know. But I know that it is very, very, very active.
And that's just the deaths that we know about. Not saying that there's more deaths. Yeah. There probably
like
is.
Like I said, there's two really, really gruesome deaths that we have no evidence of.
Sure. Well, that
somebody did not have a nice day on that mattress. Sure. And somebody did not have a nice day in that tub. So, you know, I'm not sure on those two.
And those are the, you know, the extremes of how things ended. I mean, just think of the trauma and other things that didn't necessarily cause death, but negativity that occurred up in those rooms.
Yeah, there was prostitution. There was domestic violence. There was gambling. Yeah. There was people were robbed. I mean, it was like a flop house at one time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I've got plenty of stories like that, and that building has just absorbed that over the years. We also found that wooden tablet in one of the front rooms, and I had people look at that, paranormal experts and things, and they said it's just somebody's poor attempt at conjuring something. It has some snakes drawn on it and things. So, you know, there have been others dabbling in things that they shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's a... It didn't help the place. It's definitely, I mean, I enjoy it, but others have not.
Yeah, I mean, it's a place that obviously it's like it's just a giant battery of energy of the things that occurred there. So you go through this place, and it is a time capsule. It's like, oh my gosh, you never see things like this, you know, in this kind of condition, untouched. So what happened after you go through and you see all these things that continued to connect you to this building, and how did that progress?
So started to get activity, and it's kind of weird because it's almost like some of the ghosts are in the room that they lived in. So and so that was the weird part. They didn't roam the entire building, so I could go into certain rooms, and I knew that I would be talking to that person. And there was one room in particular that we always called the drunk's room, because there was these just very large empty bottles of ancient age bourbon in the closet. And I had that confirmed by a previous manager that a guy lived there that drank a lot. And she always had to get on to him because he tried to cook on a hot plate and wasn't allowed. And then he also allowed a prostitute to do business out of his room, and they had to kick her out nude into the street. So that's the stories for some of these folks. Mm-hmm. And I started to get EVPs from this room. And one in particular, we asked, what do you do all day long? He says, I drink. And then once I found out he was an actual living person at one time, I would take him little gift bottles of bourbon and vodka and things. But his room's a little lighter. You know, there's much more heavier rooms in the location.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that hung himself in the closet, he does not like women. He will touch them quite frequently. He don't like them in his room. He talks very nasty toward them in recordings. You know, you've got a couple of ghosts that are seem to be a little more powerful, and they kind of roam the building. You've got the suicide mattress room. That room's very heavy at times. People have had nightmares. People have had bad dreams. You know, just crazy things in that location. I mean, there's a ton of different ones up there.
In a place like the Anderson Hotel, where you have just a history of trauma that was taking place there, obviously there's a lot of negativity. The thing that obviously it's popular to jump to because it creates good ratings is demons. Right. It's demons. But I do believe they exist sometimes. I also believe that, you know, evil human beings could probably be just as, you know, negative as a demon. As far as how we perceive it, what do you think you have going on up there? Is it all just negative, sad souls that are extremely misguided? You know, or is there something else that lurks there that, you know, had fed or that fed on those people while they were living?
Well, there's something that likes to bite up there. And, you know, we've had three incidents where people have been bitten by human bite marks. That's what appear.
Wow.
Not sure what that is. One of those was in the Paranormal Lockdown episode, season one, episode two, with Nick Groff and Katrina Weidman.
Okay.
But see the cameraman get bitten. And not sure why that happens. I've never been bit, but you know, we have an understanding up there, I guess. But I will tell you, it almost seems like that there are maybe one, at least one, that's a little more powerful than the others. Mm-hmm. There have been some recordings where we've asked, is there anything to be afraid of in the hotel? And they're like, and they may say, yes, run or something like that. I will say that I'm not so sure that we don't have something a little darker up there now, but I did not have any responsibility of bringing that in.
Yeah.
That was brought in by the haunted house, and we can talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
But they've make sure we talk about the haunted house, because I think some doors have been open now. But I really think that a lot of the ghosts up there are just misguided souls. Some of them were, you know, weirdos in life, as far as, you know, predatory type beings, and they're predatory in death. You know, I think that's what you get sometimes. It's just, there were so many suicides associated with that hotel. It kind of tells you the people that would live there at times. There was a guy trying to hang himself out the front window, and they stopped him. There was a former manager that right after he moved out, he shot himself. So, I mean, there was a lot of just gloominess up there, but it wasn't always gloom. I mean, I've talked to other residents where they had great times up there, and it was just a place for them to kind of get their start in the world. But, you know, it is all what you make of it, I guess. And some of these people just couldn't deal with it, and they had their own demons that they were fighting. And I think that's where you get some of that up there.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Jeff. In part two, can a very negative human spirit be classified as evil? What kinds of spirits have been brought into the Anderson Hotel after its prime? What paranormal activity has occurred during the Anderson's Hotel's commercial haunted house event? What happens to psychics who enter the doors of the Anderson? And we'll hear the story of the creepy clown figure that was given to Jeff inside the Anderson. All of that and more in part two. To become a gravekeeper and hear it, simply sign up through our channel on Apple Podcasts. Even try 3 days free. Sign up there, or if you're not an Apple Podcast user, through Patreon, patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to thegravetalks.com. and click Become a Gravekeeper. You'll get access to all of our interviews in their entirety, hundreds of them to binge away on right now. They're all there for you. Again, check it out through Apple Podcasts, patreon.com/thegravetalks, or thegravetalks.com. To learn more about the Anderson Hotel, be sure to check out oldandersonhotel.com to see what's going on with their events and happenings. oldandersonhotel.com. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening. Welcome to part two of our conversation with Jeff Waldridge. And that's an interesting thing to talk about. And this can kind of lead us into talking about the haunted house. When you have a location like this that people can investigate, that people go to and do their own tactics of this or that to try and communicate, do you feel that ends up stirring things up far more than it would be if it was just kind of left to itself? Is there a danger in things like that where it almost you're shaking, you know, the pressure cooker, if you will?
You know, I'll tell you, particularly with the Anderson Hotel, it absolutely, I love watching people investigate. It's fun for me.
Yeah,
because it will absolutely prey upon some folks. The ghosts up there, some of them are not, they're not pleasant, and they don't play well with others. They hate psychics. Anybody with sensitive abilities, they absolutely destroy, and it's fun to watch.
How do they, what happens with them?
Well, one of the first instances that I had, there was psychic that was on the ghost walk. She had been doing some readings and things before the walk, is kind of an extra deal. She said, I've never been in a haunted place. Can I come on the walk? I said, yeah, it's fine. You can go in the hotel with us. So she said that when she got to the top of the entry stairs, that a man came up, a ghost, and got in her face and told her to get the F out. She said she heard all this laughter throughout the building. And I said, well, what did the man look like? And she said, well, he had a white undershirt on, like tank top, blue slacks, no shoes. I was like, well, that's interesting. Because the man that had hung himself in the closet was when he was found, and I had the coroner's assistant go up there with me and tell me about it. And he showed me where it was. He said when they opened the closet door, he was wearing a white undershirt, tank top style, blue slacks, no shoes. His feet were very swollen because he had been there for a while. This was in 1978. Mm-hmm. He had no knowledge of that. Not many do. And so I was like, well, that's cool because that's one of the people that died up there. But it was kind of cool to see her see that. And she went all the way out of the building, all the way across the street. She said that when she got across the street, there's another lady that said, I can't be in that place. I'm kind of sensitive. And it really messes with me. So unless you're really grounded in your abilities, that place will absolutely destroy you if you're not careful. That's what I always kind of tell people. If you're sensitive in any way, you got to have your guard up in there.
Wow. So anybody who'd be like empathic and things of that nature, they're going to definitely feel it. Is it, have you had stories where people have gone in there and they've been, you know, very affected? They want to get out of there and it continues on with them. Has there been stories of anything following anyone home?
They won't follow people home. Okay. I need those ghosts back. So if they do follow you home, please send them back to me. Yes. Drop them in a mailbox and send them back. I promise I can take care of them better than you. You definitely don't want them. So, you know, I always tell people that, yes, it can affect people. The one room that I've seen affect people greatly is the mattress room. You know, it's the mattress where the young lady died. And a lot of people get very emotional. And it's just the room itself. It's very heavy. And I always tell people, well, you got to think about it like this. Not only the time when she took her life, which is very unfortunate in itself, that those walls in that room absorbed that. They absorbed that emotion. They absorbed all of that. But not only then, but the days leading up to that to make that decision, they absorbed that stuff. And, you know, I think that people disvalue that. They devalue that. And then when they're in there and they feel that, they're like, I got to get out of here. I mean, I've had people go to the street and throw up. I've had people leave in tears. I mean, sometimes it gets very heavy in certain parts of that place.
Yeah. Interesting thought when we're talking about the walls. We're talking about physical things, the structure of the building. If this is just a totally theoretical question, if someone were to take a wall, well, you just cut a big piece of the drywall out or whatever it's made out of in a building of that age. And say you take it home somewhere where nowhere near where the Anderson Hotel is. Do you think that what was absorbed in those walls would manifest itself, where there'd still be that energy surrounding it? Almost as if there's radiation in like a nuclear situation where take it wherever you want, but that the radiation is still on it.
Yeah, possibly. You know, I always tell people anything like that's possible. I do know that they've taken some of the doors and things downstairs to the bakery for decoration.
Yeah.
And they have some things down there, you know, but they're nowhere near the ghost upstairs.
Sure.
The ghost down there, a little more pleasant. You know, I think if you remove anything from a haunted location, you have the potential for something to be with it.
Okay.
And it's no different than attachments and haunted objects and things, which, you know, we have a haunted object that I have now inherited, you know, from the hotel due to the haunted house. And I will tell you that I stopped working with it around 2016. And it's kind of funny because they were starting the haunted house shortly thereafter. And I was like, it's probably not a good idea to do that here.
Yeah.
Because you're introducing all this energy that people are putting out. And then, boom, you know, they were seeing things that I'd never seen up there.
Tell me about that. Tell me what happened when the commercial version of the haunted house occurred at the Anderson. Yeah.
They were seeing a couple ghosts that I'd never seen before. They had some poltergeist activity. And it's just because they were filling the place with energy. And the place is very good at draining energy and using it accordingly. And I guess I kind of taught them how to do that with those globes. But they are 100% something is. Now, I don't know that it's all, but some things in that place know how to drain things. When Nick and them were up there filming the show, they had horrible problems keeping things, charged.
Yeah.
And they said when they left the place that they just felt like they were drained. It was the most draining shoot that they'd ever been on.
Yeah.
Because, but the thing is, it was an easy shoot. I mean, it's all one floor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it happens up there, and you will feel drained from up there because they know how to do that. And when the haunted house was in there, they were just endless supplies of energy. And it would use that, and it would flip that. And I would always have to go down every year and have counseling sessions with the actors and actresses. And about the second year of the haunted house, I had a counseling session with a few of the actresses, and we are now married. So,
well, there you go.
So, you know, it's very strange how I'm connected to this hotel, because I had not worked with it since 2016, and then I met my wife there, and you know, then we got married, and I had not messed with it, period. I hadn't investigated it, and I had an event fall through for November 12th that I was going to do, like a public investigation event for a group, and so I called the hotel, and I was like, would you be interested? And they were like, yeah, why don't you come down and talk to us? We may want to start doing some more stuff up there.
Yeah.
So I went down, and then boom, I'm back. So it's kind of like the hotel called me back. It's kind of like everything come full circle, and I'm back.
It's open again. That's an interesting phenomena. That's reminiscent. My friend Andrea Perrin from the Conjuring series. She always talks about the farmhouse that way. Where it's, you know, somebody, obviously.
She's such a sweet lady, by the way.
She's lovely.
If anybody has a chance to talk to her, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, yeah. She's the best. Me and my daughter were down in Florida last year, and I texted her a picture of some creepy clouds. And she's like, are you in Florida? I'm like, yeah. She's like, why didn't you tell? And I forgot that she lived in the Orlando area. And so we had lunch over in her neighborhood that next day. And just,
I actually got to meet the entire family.
Yeah. Yeah. It was me and her dad that day.
Yeah. So it was really great, you know, and that's, I've had to benefit. And I know we're kind of sidebarring here, but I've had to benefit to meet a lot of those folks. Like I met Carmen Reed from the Haunting in Connecticut case, the Wyrick family from the Haunting in Georgia case.
Sure.
It's great to really meet those kind of people, but to kind of get back with the hotel thing, it was kind of like the hotel called me back.
Yeah.
And, you know, the strange part is all of this stuff had to align for that to happen.
Yeah.
Because I met my wife there and we're married. It's all weird how all of this had to come full circle to connect me back to the hotel. But there were so many aspects that had to happen before I even got involved in the hotel again.
Yeah.
And you know, and then that event had to fall through. And then I just called them by chance and said, hey, would you be interested? And they were like, yeah, that's fine. And then we talked and they were like, why don't you oversee the paranormal stuff up there? Let's see if we can get some things going again. So I was like, okay, that's very, very weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then I investigated the place, for the first time since then. But when I got up there, they told me, the haunted house did, they said, we left you a gift. And we got upstairs, there was this little ceramic clown sitting on the chair. Now, this clown is what absolutely terrorized my wife when she worked in the haunted house.
Really?
It was in the room with her, and it would move. When the lights would go off, it would be in a different position. It would kind of move, turn and things. She also felt like her hair be played with and like her ankles would be touched and things like that. And this clown was just all about it. So, you know, it's funny because I sent her a picture of that clown. I was like, hey, look what I got.
Yeah.
She was like, oh my God.
Did it come home?
well, here's the thing. Yes, but not in the house. He lives in the hotel or in my trunk if I'm traveling to show him somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I got him this nice little case with foam and things inside of it, and I bound him inside the box, and he's inside of there. Now, I asked the hotel owner, the haunted house owner at the time, I was like, where'd you all get it from?
Yeah.
And they were like, we bought it at an auction in a case with other clown things for the hotel for props. So there's no telling the history of this guy.
Yeah.
I do know that his head was broke off at one time in before they got it, because you could see where it'd been glued back on.
Uh-huh.
He's missing his balloons, and he was a bank at one time, but he's missing his little stopper. So there's, I would say a child or something may have owned it.
Yeah.
But it, he's got something with him. He will absolutely peak the K2 meter. I have this nice little plasma disc that I put in there with him to kind of charge him up. And I know that sounds strange, but I try to feed them regularly.
I understand, yeah.
Building going, and I why not? I mean, it's good for research.
Sure.
But, you know, but I think that the haunted house brought that in, and I don't know what's attached to it, and I'm not so sure that it's not something darker. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you another thing that they did, which was a really bad idea, but they didn't know that. It was accidental. They drew on the wall, one of the walls in one of the rooms, the Papa Legba Voodoo Loa symbol. Mm-hmm. Now, if anybody knows anything about voodoo, Papa Legba is the man to the other side. So he's the first Loa you have to get through to get to the other side. And then you go through him, and he's kind of like that River of Styx type guy. You know, he's the gatekeeper. Well, that symbol is drawn real big on the wall, so I'm not real sure what we got open there, but okay. We'll probably just keep it there. I'm not going to mess with it, but the place ain't lost any of its pizzazz. It's probably a little more active than it ever was, honestly, and I'm kind of happy to be back up there and working with it.
Do you have you ever had any feelings there that made you want to leave or get out of it, or has it for you been a very... You know, a comfortable experience. Welcome.
I'll tell you, we have an understanding. And this is weird, I know, but I talk to them openly. And I let them know that, you know, I'll continue to bring people up there as long as they behave. You know, as long as they behave themselves and leave me alone. So I've never had any major issues as far as attacks or anything like that. They will mess with you frequently. They don't like my wife all the time because she is kind of sensitive, and that kind of, you know, they mess with her at times because they did at the haunted house. So it's almost like they recognize that energy.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, look, she's back. Hey. And then they're going at it. But, you know, I will tell you that, they will sometimes follow you all the way down to the door. I've had footsteps follow me down the stairs all the way to the front door. And I'm like, what are you doing? Go back up there.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you'll hear them. I mean, I wasn't in the hotel again. I went up there just to see the condition of the place, because I hadn't been up there since 2019, I guess, for that little counseling session. 2020, maybe. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah.
And went up there to see the condition of the place, and I heard footsteps almost immediately. And I was like, oh boy. I was like, well, okay, you haven't left, have you? But they're still there, and I don't see them going anywhere ever, because I think some of them actually enjoy being dead.
That wraps up our conversation with Jeff Waldridge. A big thank you to him for joining us and sharing his experiences with us. And if you'd like to learn more about the Anderson, check out oldandersonhotel.com. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I am Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.